Welcome to The Happy Mindset, where we use the power of language and storytelling to help you find your voice. Today's episode is episode number 33, and today's episode title is The Power of Edutainment. So today I'm joined by Dr. Natalia Fichowski. Natalia is a personal branding strategist, an international keynote speaker, and she radically changed her life after going on a self-imposed sabbatical to follow her passion of teaching other people how to market themselves. Natalia has over 14 years of experience in human behavior and social relationships. She's a doctor of philosophy and a social scientist. She came to the conclusion that personal branding is a prerequisite to design a dream lifestyle and career of purpose. She's a member of the Forbes Coaches Council, and she's been featured in magazines such as Forbes, Entrepreneur, HR Revolution ME, Cosmopolitan, and many more. Today, she's considered the number one edutainer in the Middle East. So on today's show, we're going to talk about what to do when you feel like your success is leaving you with an empty feeling inside, what personal branding is, and how to harness the power of visualization. If you enjoyed today's episode, I'd greatly appreciate it if you can leave a review and a rating wherever you're listening to it too. If you want to join the Happy Mindset community, head on over to Facebook and search for The Happy Mindset. You'll find a group of people there who are willing to learn, exchange experiences, and really up-level their lives. If you're interested in Natalia and finding out more about her and how she can help you, then there's a link in below this video and in the podcast where you can click into the website, find out more about her. There's also some links for courses she's doing at the moment, which will help you with your personal branding and how to find a job without the traditional CV and blasting out resumes with no responses. So thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and see you soon.
Okay, so thanks for joining us today, Natalia. Being on the show with us today. I just want to jump straight into what is an edutainer and how did you become one today?
An edutainer is somebody who is a mix between a teacher and somebody who works in entertainment. So it's a mix between education and entertainment. And I realized that I believe that I know a lot. I've studied social science for over 13 years. Now I'm working on my business, on setting up an international personal brand, a lucrative business that is self-sustainable. And I realized that's great. That's the thing that I want to share with the world. But I also have some sort of a clown in me, or a firecracker, or a crazy personality. And I know that's my USP, so I needed to find a way how to merge them and blend them. And this is why I came up with the word edutainer at a certain stage. And I looked it up, and I mean, 2-3 dictionaries said that it exists, but there's almost nothing, online dictionaries, but almost nothing in the World Wide Web. So I said, you know what, that's my term. I share it with the world and then tell them, listen, education can be fun, and I'm a mix of both. And I think that through that, you will really learn in a different way. You will understand things faster. You will remember them longer. And you'll feel connected to what I say. I'm not a big believer in here are the stats, read a book. Now you're done. Forget that. Make it fun.
Yeah, so I had the same kind of realization. I realized that going through academia, it was quite it could be quite dry at times. And it's like, I found that when I was trying to teach people as well, it was like, if you make it engaging or if you make it relatable to their life, that it seems to hook them and they want to actually learn. So how did you start seeing that you needed to inspire people as much as it was about the information you were giving them? When did you start learning that for yourself?
I mean, I regularly throughout my life, people said things like, oh, you're so positive, or you want so much, or you're dreaming so big. And sometimes they meant it in a positive way, and sometimes they meant it in a critical way, like, don't want so much, don't be so loud, don't be so different. Why can't you just fit in? So I always felt this mix between, wow, people like that, but then people also hate it. So I don't know, I'm heavily confused. And it took me 29 years until I realized that the life that I always lived and that people expected me to live, you know, society, my parents, my friends, my colleagues, I did all of that, but it doesn't work for me. So if it doesn't work for me, what do? They sit down and accept the life of mediocrity and pain and bleh, or I change. And well, there you go. I needed to change.
So like you reach a stage where you were successful on the surface, but you had this like empty feeling inside. How did you know what to do next? And how did you even know that there was an emptiness there? What does that feeling feel like?
I realized that at a certain stage, I was in a job. I was a marketing manager for the Middle East and African region in a huge logistics company. And I was earning good money. My team and I were on the cover of magazines. I drove a fancy sports car. You know, I was shopping like a crazy person, celebrating brilliant parties in Dubai. So I ticked all of these boxes that usually people would say, whoa, that's what a successful person does. And when you do these things or have these things, you're also happy. So everybody thought and said that I'm happy and successful. And I wasn't, because I felt like in the morning I woke up with some sort of, it's not an anxiety attack, but it was stomach cramps. And I felt empty, and I felt a mini panic thought in me that, you know, that always raced and said, I don't want to go to work. Why am I doing this? Everything is so slow. Everything is so painful. But this is not what life is all about. And this went on for a relatively long time until I literally ended up in hospital twice per month. And the doctor said, well, we tested everything. We don't know where it comes from, but it is severe pain and you need to fix it somehow, because this could end up really, really in a horrible way. And I realized, okay, doctors don't know what it is, but it is a real problem. I'm suffering. I'm in hospital. I hate my life. I hate my job. And this was one of these random moments where the universe or higher intelligence or God or whoever you believe in, nature, sent me a few clues, because I think I started to wake up, or I started to be a little bit more aware. And there were a few quotes or thoughts that were literally that slap in the face, that reality check. And one of them was, the pain that you're going through is self-created. And I was like, ouch, touché. Okay, so I'm creating that. And the other one was, be the change you want to see in the world. And I thought, ooh, that means that I'm not nuts. That means I'm not crazy. That means I can do whatever I want, because it's based on how I want to see the world. So I start with fixing myself first, and then maybe I'll be able to help others, because then they will listen to me. So let's forget about everything that you ever learned and literally start here.
Yeah, no, I like that. Yeah, and it's like to move forward, oftentimes you do need to unlearn and relearn again. That's part of the actual, and that's why it's so difficult, because you held on to these beliefs for so long that seem to be true. In order to move forward, you need to let go of those beliefs. But had you seen quotes like that before? Like, was it just because your situation and you were aware of that, you were looking for that? Or had you seen quotes like that before and it just didn't resonate with you? Was it because of your situation you're in that you were more open to seeing these things in a different way?
I think what applied to me is what Tony Robbins once said. I think he said, give me a second, people only change when the pain of staying the same is bigger than the pain of change. And I think that's very powerful. I've been wired in a way that somehow, you know, life is a little bit about suffering and you need to support other people, and this is, you know, it's about compromises and don't put yourself first all the time. But then I started reading about the biographies of other people, and I read about successful self-made millionaires, and I saw that there are so many jobs out there that I've never heard about, and it felt as if these kind of people literally hit the reset button and then started, I mean, built their own business, built their own empire, built their own job. And once all of this, like once I understood it, and I understood that the likeliness that I can also do that, it all made sense. And it's when I said, you know what, quit the job, go on that sabbatical, relearn everything, learn to accept and love yourself, forgive yourself, And then start working on who you want to be and how you can help other people, and then also make a living from that.
Okay. So the practical step then was a sabbatical after back of these realizations. So what did you do during your sabbatical year, and what was the biggest lesson you learned during that year?
The biggest lesson I've learned, I think one of the sentences that resonated a lot with me is that the majority of people will choose unhappiness over uncertainty. So I think that was Tim Ferriss who said it. And for me, that was just such a game changer, because I'm a person, I need risk, I like risk, and I would always go for risk instead of being unhappy. But this is what 99% of people don't do. They would always go for, at least it's safe, at least it's stable, at least I know what it is. That drives me insane. That was the root source of my pain. So once I understood that, understood that I'm not normal, understood that I'm weird, understood that this is my power, understood that this is what makes me unique, and I need to polish that in order to become the best version of myself, in order to help other people, in order to inspire other people to do exactly that. So I think, yeah, that was one of the core sentences that really resonated with me.
Yeah. So like the words you mentioned there, like weird and not normal, I think those are words that are kind of emotionally charged for people that stop them from stepping into their authentic selves. So like, what do those type of words mean to you when they're thrown at you, or people might dismiss you and they'll say you're an oddball or weird or whatever? What's your thought process around that? How does it affect you?
I give them my biggest smile from the bottom of my heart, and I say, thank you. I see that as a compliment. And that's really true. Over the years, this is exactly how I feel, because the opposite of crazy or weird for me is normal, and normal comes from norm. And it is a great guideline. I think we need norms now in society, because alternatively societies wouldn't function. There need to be some guidelines in order to keep these masses of people together. But as long as you do not hurt other people, as long as you do not hurt the planet or animals, you know, the world is your oyster. It would be also ideal if you don't do things that are illegal. But if you think that you can do whatever you want as long as people don't know about it, go ahead. Like, who am I to judge you or stop you? So for me, weird or crazy means that you worked on yourself. It means that you understood that there's no right or wrong, that the truth doesn't exist, that we're all here for a specific purpose. And that person is very, very unique and interesting, and I want to spend time with that person. And all of the greatest thinkers on this planet, all of these people who changed the world, everybody thought that they were not so crazy or insane in the beginning, until more and more people understood them, and then they created a movement, and then through that, social change occurred.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, it's just reframing that, yeah, and speaking your own language. That's what's been helping me. It's like around these words where you feel like there's a certain exact meaning to it. I think they need to be challenged in your own mind in order for you to follow, to move forward in life, because otherwise those words would be like an obstacle for you really being yourself. So like for you, how did you get into personal branding? What brought you into that field of like, that's what you wanted to help people with in particular?
It was a long process. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I didn't know what was important to me. So I sat down, understood that I'm a person who needs a lot of time. I need freedom, or at least the illusion of freedom. I like to read. I like to learn. I'm obsessed with self-development. But I'm a millennial, so I'm also obsessed with social media. Okay. And I was always, always wondering and fascinated by people who are self-made millionaires. So I literally started reading about social media, started reading about these self-made millionaires, and I started to see patterns. And at a certain stage, I understood that you need to somehow tell a story, and there is a structure to this madness. And while creating content, while taking people on a journey of like, hey, I'm on a sabbatical, I quit my old job, I quit my first life, I don't know where I'm going, but it's going to be a hell of a ride, and I know that I'm going to come out successful and awesome. People started read my articles, and they had questions to this and questions to that. And at a certain stage, there was this one friend of mine, and she approached me with a book. And this woman turned into a client later on, hilarious. So she said, Natalia, there's this book and I'm too busy to read it. But in the end, you do exactly that. So can you read it and then teach me the core essentials? And I was like, yeah, of course, bring it on. And the book said impression management, which is a different word for personal branding. And I looked at it with a huge quotation mark in my head thinking, what the heck? I have no clue. But I told her, oh, of course, that's what I do. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I'm going to read it and I'm going to teach you. No problem. And I read the whole book and I thought, that's really what I do. And my background of being a social scientist makes huge sense. So I was like, oh, personal branding is what I do. And this also helps me helping other people. Because one of my big frustration was also that I had a lot of creative friends, dancers, artists, people who create jewelry, musicians, and they always had struggles with paying their bills or with feeding their family. And that really upset me when I saw these guys who are less qualified and less talented and maybe even assholes, but they make a fortune. And then there are these creative people and they don't know how to survive, like forget strife, survive. So these guys knew something, and it is how to market themselves. So I studied these guys and the guys who do it right, and then taught these guys. Boom, personal branding was born.
Okay, so you think it's the personal branding is the link there, as in like it's the creatives who are struggling, who aren't presenting themselves in the manner they could be presenting themselves in. Okay. Yep. And so did you feel like this was your opportunity as well to bring your academic knowledge to something real as well, like because you have a background in human behavior and social sciences?
Exactly. Because as a social scientist, the job doesn't exist. I mean, you can start working in HR, maybe in marketing, maybe you do some pro bono work. And I tried a few things. I tried working in education. I worked in marketing. I worked as a freelancer in PR and marketing. And none of this made sense to me. And I always had the feeling that I used my knowledge against, like my marketing knowledge against human beings. So now, as I've studied human behavior, I mean, personal branding is self-marketing. So now I can make use of all of that knowledge and empower people, which is, for me, amazing. Yeah, and I think it makes me also more credible with the approach that I have. And I guess the personal branding concept that I have developed is very different from what you find in the market, because it's based on, you know, everything that I've learned during my studies. And then on top, everything that you need to know in order to make it on social media.
Yeah, so it's relevant to the modern day. Yeah, it's practical as well. Yeah, actually, could you speak about your glasses as well? Actually, the blue glasses, like that ties into your personal branding as well. It was quite interesting where that comes from.
Sure. So I learned in the process of branding myself that you need to have some sort of trademark, and I was really lost and I had no clue. So some people have a different or crazy haircut, or they wear huge earrings, or they always wear colorful clothes, or I don't know, they have a crazy pet or something. And I didn't know what it was. And I realized when I was still experimenting a lot on Instagram that the first perception that I created in people was, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're so cute. And that annoyed me because many people were not reading my captions, but they were always sidetracked by my beauty. So I thought, what can I do? Is there anything that I can show people that, I'm a thinker, I'm a doctor of philosophy, I'm a social scientist, so I spread knowledge. I know how I look like. And yes, of course, in a society that's obsessed with beauty and success and achievements, it's definitely of help when you're perceived as being beautiful. But I don't want to make this my focus. There are some brands, some personal brands, some women who say, I come like this and, my beauty is the hook. I said, I don't want that. So somehow I stumbled over a few books who said, you want to be perceived as intellectual? Get yourself a pair of glasses. And I was like, no, not going to do that. And it's apparently the oldest trick in a book. So I was like, well, I read it a couple of times. Let me try it. And now, yeah, people love it. I think my recognition value is so much higher. No matter where I go, when I run around with these glasses, people are like, oh, Dr. Natalia, oh my God, love your glasses. It's also a good conversation starter. And a comment that I read very often now is beauty with brain, or the brain who is also beautiful. So boom, there you go. Created the perception that I wanted.
Cool. Yeah, that makes, yeah, perfect. Because it's magenta. Is there any reason for the actual color of them? Is that just, is there any significance for that for you, or?
As you can see at the back, these are my brand colors. So I was looking for something turquoise, anything in that bubble. And when you believe or read a little bit more about color psychology, turquoise is, when you look at chakras, is somewhere here. So it's about speaking up. It's about expressing yourself. It's about being you. And when you go a little bit into a darker blue, it also stands for wisdom and knowledge and trust. So I thought these are, again, the perceptions that I want to, or the associations that I want to have with my brand. And again, so far, so good. Touch wood.
Cool. Well, it's the attention to detail there that you're deliberately choosing that color for a reason there. So actually, your wall there reminded me of Lewis Howes. I'm a big fan of Lewis Howes' podcast. And he talks a lot about the masks of masculinity. I was just wondering, in your own journey, what mask was it hard for you to take off, but was also the most liberating in your life as well?
I think the mask of being perfect. I'm originally from Germany, and there's a tendency that we are raised in a way that you either do it perfectly or you don't do it at all. So everything needs to be tested and trained and done in an amazing way. And then, you know, once you made it, you go out there and then you present it, and everything has to be perfect. You need to be the perfect student and the perfect sister and the perfect daughter and the perfect, professional, and everything is perfect. And then I learned about the American culture and the American way of thinking. And also that combined with the entrepreneurial mindset, which was insane and so interesting for me, because these guys are like, oh, forget perfect, just go out there, make mistakes, that's how you grow, you know, just fake it till you make it. You cannot succeed without failure. And I was like, it's going to be painful, but let me try it. So nowadays I always say that authentic is the new perfect, and I describe myself as flawsome. So I'm awesome, but I have quite a few flaws, because I'm a human being and perfect is an illusion. So getting there was quite a process. Of course, I haven't reached like 100% yet, but I think it also gets easier the older you get, or the more mature you get, and the more successful you get in your own perception. So the more you reach your own targets, and the more you realize I'm actually living and building and working on that life and career that I want to have, the more you really are you, and the less you give about what people think about you. And this is when the beauty of authenticity and realness really happens. And that's what people are craving for nowadays. We have so much fakeness and so much Photoshop and so much editing out there that people really celebrate you when you have the courage to say, yeah, that's me. I mean, I'm not here to insult anybody. I'm not going to be an asshole, but that's me. And if you feel offended by the fact that I have a pimple in my face, or that I sometimes swear, or that my nails are not perfectly polished, that's not my problem. That's your problem, because it triggers an insecurity in you, not in me. I'm as happy, as successful as I've never been. If you need a hug, let me know.
That's cool. Yeah, it's taking ownership of your own emotions. That's the key thing there, I think. You use visualization as well in your day-to-day and for expanding what you want in your life. How do you go about doing it? What's your approach to visualization?
I've learned, who was it? I think the first person who taught me that was Tony Robbins. And then I studied other coaches and psychologists and healers and shamans and many, many people in that area. And they all believe in the power of visualization and the in a way that you need to first understand what it is that you want, and then you need to manifest it through all of your senses. So imagine you want to be a great keynote speaker. So you need to sit down, close your eyes, and imagine yourself on the stage. What will you see? You know, how many people are there? Is it 5,000? Is it 10,000? What's the color of the stage? What are you wearing? What's the interior design of that whole area? Is it a stadium? Is it a concert hall? Is it an opera? What is it? So what do you see? What do you hear? Are people screaming your name? Are they crying? Are they laughing? What do you smell? How does it smell? I don't know. Come up with something. How does it feel? What are you going through? Are you excited? Are you anxious? Are you laughing on your own because you find it so ridiculously funny? Taste, you can even go for taste. Most probably you will feel very dry in your throat in the beginning. And then you might drink a glass of cold water. So you have, you know, fresh cold water going down your throat. So the more you paint this picture in your head, and the more you go through these emotions and you deeply breathe in and breathe out, and you see it and you feel it and you go through all of that. And now again, it turns a little bit gaga for the majority of people who will listen to that, but you can get yourself into a state in which you get goosebumps and even cry tears of joy. And this is just insane. This kind of power of visualization, this stage, you will get there with training and with repetition. It's fascinating because apparently our subconscious functions in a way, or the way how we are wired, the pictures that we go through, our system doesn't understand if that is real or imagined. And whenever you're in a situation and you start to panic, then your mind usually starts to go back to moments in which you didn't succeed. Because again, that's how we are wired. But when you have these positive images in your mind, then it's like, wait, but I know how it's going to be, and I know I deserve it, and it feels good, and I can achieve it. So this can be your subconscious, you know, guide, or your basis to actually really achieve what you want to do. And I'm not the expert on this topic. I'm far away from that. But this is a method that worked for me, and this is how I understood the whole concept again for me, myself, and I.
That sounds powerful. What would be the, if somebody is curious about visualization, they just want to give it a go, just a quick kind of go, what would be the easiest step for them to do it today?
I think really sitting down and understanding what is the first goal that you want to reach. What is it? Is it that you want to live your dream life? Okay, then sit down and think what that means to you. How does your perfect morning look like, the day, the evening? Or is it that you want to lose 10 kg? Then imagine how that feels. So get clear on that goal first and make it realistic and tangible. And then, you know, daily, sit down daily for 10 minutes, start with 3, make it 5, make it 7, make it 8. And combine that, for example, with first a meditation technique, or some breathing, some proper breathing, then you do meditation, and then you do some visualization. If affirmations work for you, you throw in some affirmations in between that. I personally don't resonate with them. I tried, I gave my best. I find them a little bit awkward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, again, figure out what works for you.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. On your sabbatical there, like you learned a lot of spiritual lessons. So how did you go about moving into the corporate space? How did you start finding the language that was still aligned with what you learned, but in a way that resonated with people in the corporate world? How do you find that balance for yourself?
I do two things. First of all, I give my best to put myself into my shoes 3 years ago and what I thought first when I read about that, which was hippie shit. Those people were on drugs. I don't get it. Why can't you use a language that I understand? If you really want to teach me something, then explain it to me in a way that I get it. Because apparently you're so spiritual or you're so aligned, but you too ignorant to explain it to me in a way that I get it. So I was like, that's again the whole concept. It doesn't make sense. You cannot help people when you don't speak their language. So that was the first thing. I always imagine the frustration that I went through. Yeah. And then I also see and observe and listen to people and to their problems and how they speak. So I always start very, how can I say that, in very common, very business language. And then I throw in some key terms and see how people react on that. And I throw in, you know, second level of terms, a way of describing things and notices. Then usually it's about the way how you, you know, your vibe attracts your tribe. And, you know, there's some theories, belief that at the end we're all vibrating. And I can see in the eyes of people if they're like, oh my God, now she's losing it. I should go back. I ask for feedback, and then based on that, it's a dance. It's a real balance act. But sometimes I didn't imagine anything, and then you know you talk with people about what was it recently? It was about aliens and plant based medicine. I was like, what? You read about this topic? You watch documentaries on that? It's like, never ever would I have thought that. Oh my God, yeah. So that's really, really cool. I think if you want to help, let your ego at home and really speak the language of your audience. And this is what I also do in my writing and my blog and in all of my videos. I could speak highly sophisticated and, you know, make myself sound as if, oh yeah, she's a doctor of philosophy. But I find that boring. I think I would disconnect with my audience. And I know that if I speak how I speak, if I write how I speak, if I am the person that I usually am, you know, across my friends or at the kitchen party, it's more entertaining. Again, more people will listen, more people will understand. I get more attraction, more views. And through that, I can spread my message. So it's all connected.
That sounds good. How do you know when you're connecting with your audience? How do you know that for yourself?
Online or offline, like on a stage, or do you mean social media?
Actually, that's quite interesting because I find online is quite difficult because you don't see the immediate reaction. It's like speaking a language. I find over the phone is the hardest because you've got no cues to go off of. You've only got a tone of voice. But online is quite interesting. Yeah. How do you know what you're landing with people online?
I really ask them a squabillion questions all the time. I mean, I really worked a lot on Instagram recently. So what I do is at the moment, it's like around 10, 15 Insta stories every day. And I give people the opportunity to ask me questions. It's like, ask me questions. What do you want to know? I'm here to help. What do you want to know? How can I improve my content? What is it that you want to hear more of? What are your problems? Guys, I'm not doing that for my ego. I'm doing that for you. And I preach that every day. And a lot of people actually ask me questions. And then I send them either voice notes or I create little videos. Like people will not see who asked the question, but I answer it anyway. And I think you must get a direct notification or something. Because these people get back to me and they're like, oh my God, I would have never imagined that you answered my, question. And I feel so inspired or that makes so sense. So it's really that daily engagement with people. And people, not as a number, not as a follower, not as a, I don't know how people think about it, but for me, it's I'm a human being, you're a human being. You really have a problem? Amazing, I'm going to help you. You're here to waste my time? Screw you. I'm going to ignore you.
Do you think it comes from curiosity of like what people's questions are and how you can help them? Do you think that's I think the more I approach it that way, the less I have in my own mind because I'm just coming from a place of being curious about them and trying to figure out number one, what their question is. Number two, whether I can actually help them or not.
You need to figure out. I mean, in the end, yes, social media is there to build a brand. It's to inspire people. Fantastic. It's to help other people. It's there to connect with people. But I mean, in my case, at least, I also make money through social media. I generate leads. I am connected to potential customers. So I need to create content that resonates with them, which I can only do when I know their problems, when I speak their language. So instead of paying a fortune for some highly sophisticated research or social studies, I ask them directly. And I think it's fair. I think it's fun. People like it. They feel respected. They feel honored. So why not? I think that makes so much more sense than any other approach that I read about.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's shifting from seeing people as numbers and data to actually seeing them as individual human beings. And I think that like when you go to academia, sometimes you get lost in the figures and the words and stuff. You forget that why you're going there in the first place. And then when you go out in the real world, you realize I'm here to solve my problems and solve other people's problems and create something from that. So that makes makes sense. So one question I'd wonder too is, so how would you know if you're living a life you could be happy with and you'd be proud of? How do you know what that would look like for you?
How do you know you live a happy life? For me, another painful but very interesting question was, Natalia, what would you want people to say, you know, the day you died? You know, maybe when there's a ceremony, or what would your tombstone say? Or the second before you die, what would you have to do that you don't die with regrets? These questions were abstract at the beginning. I didn't get them, and I thought, why would I think about them? And that's stupid, and that's hypothetical, because I still have like 70, 80 years, blah, whatever. But then I was like, okay, you know, I'll give it a try. Everybody speaks about it. And it was painful. I had no clue where to start. And this then all goes back to your values and what's important to you, how you want to live, with whom you want to work. And I realized that I want to make people think, and I want to make them smile. And I want to make sure that people who decide to work on themselves, you know, when they worked in corporate and they start doing their own thing, but they work for somebody and start doing their own thing, that they succeed. And this is connected to self-marketing. So I have these elements, and I know that when I'm going to work on them, no regrets, because I will leave the world one day in a better place than I think it was before there was me. I know it sounds a little bit megalomaniac, but I know that I helped people. And I have proof. I have social proof. I have messages. I have testimonials. I have screenshots. And I think this is what it's all about. We're here to explore, experience, and help other people. Everybody who really understood life says that. And I understood that it's also true for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would it be fair to say your metrics are that to make people think and to make people smile? That's the two metrics that you would judge your life on. Yeah, that's pretty simple and straightforward. Yeah. So like yourself too, so you're bilingual. So you speak German and English, or do you speak any other languages?
I speak a little bit of Polish because my parents are from Poland, but I don't speak it regularly, so it's not so good. And I also had French for a very long time in school, and part of my family also lives in France. So my French is also not too bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, these four.
What would you say you've learned about yourself from learning a foreign language?
About myself from learning a foreign language? That first of all, when you know the foundation of one thing and then you learn something similar and then you learn something similar, it's so much easier to learn new things because there are similarities. Mm-hmm. And sometimes different languages have more accurate words for feelings, for sensations, for things. So and through that, it shapes the way how we're speaking and thinking. So our language also creates, how can I say that, our own perception on society or on this planet, simply because we use language or these words as a tool to see, to describe things. Somebody from another culture with another language might see it like this. And just because it's a different world, it might trigger a totally new thought and a new perspective on reality, whatever that means, because it's also very objective. So I think these were the core lessons learned again, very, very powerful and very confusing.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Like, that's, they're the kind of lessons that I learned from language learning, and they're not the things that are quite, they're not obvious. Like, if you're not, if you haven't learned a language before, my perception before I learned French was that you're just learning new words to speak to new people. But I hadn't seen that you're going to see similarities and patterns between languages, that you're going to discover yourself through. Like, I realized from French, I could express myself differently because I had different emotional attachments to different words. So in French, I could say, je t'aime wasn't as highly emotionally charged as I love you in English. Just things like that, which I had never really considered. And I started realizing how emotionally charged certain words are. And then I started realizing how there's many different meanings to different words. It's not just a dictionary definition that everybody needs to abide by. Going back to our, you being weird or that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's quite powerful though. So is there any book that you'd recommend from your journey so far that stands out in your mind?
So many. Yeah. I think there are at least 30 great books that I could recommend. But it really depends on what your biggest question is. But one great book as a starter for me was Robin Sharma, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. It was, how can I say that? It's basically a book that tells a story, but through that story, it opens your mind towards the truth that life doesn't need to be so hard, and maybe you're more than just this flesh and physical body, and maybe you deserve more, and maybe there's even a systematic approach to get there. But again, Robin speaks the language that everybody who's still awake will understand. So I think that's a good book to start with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good book. So for 2019, do you have any message to share with people for the year ahead? Any advice that you give?
Any advice? I think the faster you figure out why you're here, and what makes sense to you, what you value, what's important to you, the easier and the more fun life will be. I've experienced it on my own, and I'm a very critical person, hardwired to be a thinker, but I learned to be somebody who is also in the moment, who gives him, I give my best to be in the now, I give my best to meditate, I give my best to also higher forces to guide me. I learned how to surrender, although it's still very, very difficult to me. So not everything needs to be planned. So in the end, what I want to say is really give yourself the permission to figure out who you truly are, and you will, like, your life and your business will radically change for better.
That's good advice. I was balancing the pragmatism with the spiritual side. Is that how you've gone about it there? Yeah, that's
good. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, finding the balance, and a balance that works for you. Mm. This is what it's about. I mean, I look almost 8 years younger than I am. I am almost never sick. The people that enter my life, I'm regularly thinking, amazing, like, thank you. Cool. I've been waiting for you for the last 5 years. Okay, apparently now I'm ready. Amazing. Which means I worked on myself, which means I finally reached that step. So invest in yourself and learn to love and accept yourself. I know it sounds cheesy, but for lack of a better expression, this is what it is.
Yeah. Perfect. Thanks, Natalia. That's some great advice. Thanks for sharing your experience today and the lessons you've learned along the way.
You're most welcome.
Thanks again for joining us. So until next time, have fun and enjoy the process.